Previously on Video Killers.
Hello, welcome to the Video Killers podcast. I am your host, Tim Hawley, and I'm joined by my lovely co-hosts, Colette Ritchie.
Hi.
And Greg K.
The loveliest.
Yeah, real quick, I mean, we've been playing with the format of the podcast to see kind of what works. We started off, we were going to try and do what we've been watching and then going into like a kind of a deep dive subject matter and then do music. And we figured it'd be to keep the episodes from getting into like in the multiple hour territory that we would do what we've been watching and the music stuff as a separate episode, every other one, and then do the deeper dive so we have more time and a little bit more energy to put towards some of the stuff that we want to try and cover. So this week's is going to be what we've been watching and some of that other fun stuff. And I guess just general news. So Greg, you got any general news that you want to cover right away?
CBS All Access dropped the trailer for The Stand, I believe, this Friday.
Boom.
In the world that was, they told you it was wrong. Want more. Their time is at an end. Our time has begun.
There's bitter days ahead. Death and terror. The dark man grows stronger every day. And soon he'll destroy all who stand against him.
You see, the world is now a blank page.
And it is there. Must make your stand.
I think it looks pretty fun. I've read the book.
It's a long book, too, right?
It's a long book.
Somebody interesting is like the showrunner, like directing it, right? Can't remember who it is.
You might be right. You're putting me on the spot, but that's I'm used to it. It's okay. Benjamin Covell is probably the guy you're talking about who's behind shows like Sneaky Pete, Homeland, Justified.
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's got some credibility in.
The cast sounds interesting. Yeah. I never saw or read The Stand.
Oh, you never saw the old miniseries, the McGarris one?
No, it seemed really scary. Oh.
I found it was anything but. I didn't mind it. I like McGarris as a person more than I like him as a filmmaker, personally.
Yeah, I remember liking it when it was on. I remember, that was the era of those Stephen King miniseries, like It and Tommyknockers and stuff. Like, they weren't all, they weren't great all the way through, but they always had enough cool elements that they were really fun to tune in and watch and get creeped out.
Yeah,
on broadcast TV.
Yeah, I never watched any of those. Tommyknockers about aliens. I feel like it was about aliens.
It's about aliens.
From the best-selling novel by Stephen King, Haven, a sleepy New England town whose patriotic spirit is alive and well. But lately, another kind of spirit has been knocking at Haven's doors.
Tommyknockers knocking at the door.
Something is happening here.
Two disappearances in 1 week.
There are those who believe.
We are about to reach the final phase.
There's something there, all right. And that something has made the whole town go to hell fast.
There are those who deny.
Whatever this thing is making you, whatever the hell it's doing to you, it's not good, Bobby.
There are those who refuse to give in. From the world's undisputed master of horror comes an extraordinary tale of terror.
Join us.
Stephen King's The Tommyknockers.
You bring up an interesting point, though. That's something I guess we'll never have back. Not in the way it once was, the miniseries phenomenon. Like, earliest I remember is V, which we brought up on the show already. But I remember that being a big deal. I was a little kid, but even I knew about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in The Stand, it was a big deal because of It. That miniseries was amazing.
Yeah.
That was the one that I think we all maybe not have mentioned much of, but a little bit, but I think we all have a little kinder trauma.
Yeah.
Throwback to the episode from
for
that
sure.
One.
It freaked me out. Yeah. Tim Curry, as Pennywise, freaked me out as a kid.
I successfully avoided that. But but I knew it was scary. Yeah. So like, I was already traumatized.
I think it's still better than the new movies that came out, which were fine, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it's just nostalgia talking, but I really like the original series better.
Yeah.
The Stand, when that miniseries came out, I had just finished the book. So I guess that's about whenever that was when I read it. I remember not holding up, but it was a TV movie.
Yeah. But so. I remember it had some, it kind of pushed this is some of like the kind of creepy elements. There was some fun set pieces and some kind of weird, creepy bits.
V was on network TV and they peeled his face off on that.
Yeah. But have you seen the special effects in V recently?
No. I just remember them in my brain.
They're not, they don't hold up as well as you might remember.
I guess in other news of like some of the release companies that have kind of dropped some titles that they're coming out here soon. The big one is Vinegar Syndrome revealed their Black Friday pre-sale thing with some of their new titles, which I know you picked up all of them, right, Greg? Which is like Don Coscarelli's Beastmaster, which is like finally making its way to Blu-ray for the first time. And Fade to Black, I don't know how they worked out the rights on that because that's been tied up in like legal limbo forever. Like,
Twinkle, twinkle, movie star. Eric knows just where you are. Try to run, try to hide. You won't get out of this alive. Dennis Christopher in Fade to Black. Rated R.
Because they use so many like vintage clips from other films, like other all these multiple studios and stuff like that.
They're like classic, Universal classic clip,
yeah.
If I remember. Now it's been a while since I've seen
it. How did they get away with it in the first place?
I don't know.
Weird.
No, I think that's why it's been stuck on VHS forever. It didn't even make it to DVD. So like it's crazy that Vinegar Syndrome is doing that. Awesome. And then they also doing a second obscure Giallo box set, the second one of those, which is exciting. I guess I don't know any of those titles, but excited to check them out.
Oh, they're so obscure you don't even know what they are.
Some of them have never been released, I don't think, in any format. I think some of the ones that they in the previous set had only made it to VHS overseas. Like they never made it even to the US in any form.
Huh.
Like they're going real deep with some of this stuff. It's crazy.
You know, you think you've seen everything and then they show up, you know, someone finds a box in a garage somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hopefully they're just a hair less misogynist than some of them.
Yeah. But then Severin Films is releasing Luigi Cozzi's Black Cat, which is one I've never seen before, but it's the director of like Star Crash and Contamination, which is exciting. And yet another film based on the Edgar Allan Poe story. So many. Yeah,
but with the Luigi Cozzi twist.
Filter. And then Patrick Lives, which is another one that I never thought would ever see the light of day.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. I've seen a bootleg of it, and it's a mean-spirited movie, if I remember.
But yeah, it's an unofficial Italian sequel to the Australian film Patrick.
That would be amazing to see. Because the original one is kind of mean-spirited. It's been a while since I've seen it, but I feel like he's very angry the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, he's just comatose.
Well, yeah.
he's got the unibrow, just
buggy eyes.
Yeah, he just looks mean.
Yeah, he looks creepy as hell.
Didn't he kill it? I don't know. Never mind.
And then I guess I'm back, another reference back to our Kinder Trauma episode. After we recorded that, Scorpion announced that they're doing a like deluxe reissue box set of I Spit on Your Grave, which I know some people were excited about. If that's your bag, they're doing like
I've already ordered it.
Did you?
Yeah, I thought that was Ronin Films. Are they one and the same?
It's Ronin Flicks is the distributor for Scorpion and Code Red and a few other those ones that are all kind of intertwined. So I believe I Spit on Your Grave is officially a Scorpion, I'm pretty sure. But
excited about that myself because, I mean, it's kind of hard to say you're excited about I Spit on Your Grave, but I'm a big fan of Joe Bob Briggs, and his commentary on that is very eye-opening and well thought out. And he also did commentary now for the sequel they made, which looks ridiculous. But, you know, that alone's worth it to me because I love hearing his commentaries.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a cool-looking box set, too. So, I don't know. Yeah, I've spoiled myself way too much this season.
I mean, there's been...
we're going to be locked inside and it's going to be actual winter, so...
Yeah.
Right. And I'm just preparing.
It's just crazy. Like, we're living in a time, if you're a fan of genre movies like this, it's just like, there's so much coming out all the time. It's stuff like Fade to Black that you just never thought would ever get released. It's like, they're figuring it out, which is crazy. So, I mean, it's just a matter of time before everything eventually probably gets a release.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the soundtrack tip, Waxwork Records announced that they're releasing The Haunting of Bly Manor, the brand new Netflix show that just dropped. And then they are finally, they're repressing The Haunting of Hill House score, which they had put out previously that went out of print. Just announced that I think yesterday that they're Sweet. Both of those vinyls are coming out. And then on Terror Vision Records, which has been doing amazing work releasing these deluxe vinyl issues of soundtracks from shot on video films, they just recently did the soundtrack to Video Violence, which is great. But then they just also released the soundtrack to 555 on vinyl.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's 555?
It's a kind of notorious, like, shot on video horror film. It's like zero budget. Like,
oh no.
It's great. I got it in the mail already because I'm a subscriber, and it's a really fun soundtrack, actually.
How is the Video Violence soundtrack? If you listen to
it's,
that,
it's really good too. Yeah, it's like, and I don't think the filmmakers or the composers or anybody ever thought that these scores would ever get any right. kind of official release. But yeah,
Video Violence, by the way, is a great movie.
Oh yeah.
The sequel is pretty fun, but they kind of lean more into the comedy, the second one. And not that the first one's not a comedy, because it really is, but they tried to double down on the sequel, which you do.
I don't think we've ever watched it. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but it's
the first one, at least, is these two people come into a small town and buy a video store, and they find out that people in town don't want anything with sex, but anything with violence is perfect. So they're coming in and renting all these violent, gory, horrible movies. And they're like, what? So there's something weird going on in the town. It's just a mm-hmm. thing. And so they start making their own movies, mm-hmm. video violent movies, and they start selling them. And that means they have to kill off people in town. So
yeah, it's only a matter of time before everything leads to snuff films. I always said.
Yeah. Well, the second one is leans into the snuff thing even more. It becomes like they have a channel. A public access channel.
Yes. Yeah,
that one. It's just killing people.
But I was to say, like, the main thing I remember from Video Violence is that it's a really cool document of the video store era, like of video stores. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just really cool. Just for that, it's cool to see that. So I mean, this is fun. Yeah, I love any scene in a movie that goes into a video store, or even like old grocery store scenes in films. I always like to see the set, you know. It's like, oh, I remember that. I remember those. It's like just weird, this nostalgia seeing stuff that I remember.
I love seeing when people walk 42nd Street in New York or whatever. Yeah. Too. I love seeing the old grindhouses. So
yeah,
same thing. But yeah.
All right. Should we get into stuff we've been watching? You want to kick us off, Greg?
I recently, as of yesterday, finished The Boys on Amazon.
What's Sporty Spice up to? Who? Sporty fucking Spice, what's she up to?
I don't know.
And baby, not even page 6 of the Daily Mail. You see, when they're apart, they're absolute fucking rubbish. But you put them together, they're the goddamn fucking Spice Girls. The point is, we need each other. We're fucking dead in the water.
Jesus, he gives the worst pep talks.
He really, really does.
Yeah.
Season 2 just ended with a bang.
Nice.
I'm not even like into comic books and action heroes and whatnot too much, but the show is so amazing. It takes all the tropes that you know, but makes it pretty much realistic. They would probably be jerks.
Right. Like, yeah.
Not every one of them would be this great person. You know, they mm-hmm. would abuse their power. And mm-hmm. it just seems like, and it really does capture that, what the world would feel like if we really had that. There'd be corporations sponsoring them. They would be everywhere. I just think everyone in that show is amazing, especially Carl Urban. He makes profanity like a piece of art in that movie. And then I really like the actor's name is escaping me, and I could easily look it up, but I won't. But I'll put in the show notes is the guy who plays Outlander, which I've never seen anything else, and he's the main superhero.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. He's very layered. And he's very creepy, and he's mm-hmm. terrifying at times. So yes, I highly recommend The Boys.
Does it the second season, I mean, we watched the first season. We haven't watched the second season yet. But
Second season ended yesterday, Friday the 9th.
Does it up the ante of the kind of like insanity, like some of like the like gore and set pieces and things like that?
Yes, they don't hold back. I don't even know if they up it as much as they keep very consistent with it.
Okay, cool.
Anyone who watches the show, all you have to say is the whale scene and they'll break out in laughter. I think the breakout star of the Supes really is probably Chance Crawford, who plays the Deep, which is their Aquaman.
Yeah.
He was fun in the first season. They lean into him big time this season.
Okay, cool.
So anyway, again, I recommend The Boys.
I'm going to have to recommend that to a couple people in my book club who they hate. There's one couple who loves superhero movie, or one couple where one person loves superhero movies and I love superhero movies, and then we'll get talking about like the new things that came out. But then there's another couple where the guy is just pretty, doesn't really care one way or the other about it, but his wife is like, hates how unrealistic they are. And we're like, it's not a realistic thing. But that's, I feel silly, like, yeah, you should watch The Boys, because this is going to address a lot of issues that you've had with these movies so far. Yeah. We're never that heated. I don't think we've ever actually had a full-out argument about anything, but like, yeah.
I can't imagine.
Well, that'd be a weird argument to walk away from. Be like, oh yeah, man, I'm so mad.
The realistic nature of Superman.
It got heated.
We've been watching Lovecraft Country. We're 7 episodes in. I think we have three more left.
I'm stuck at 2. I just haven't had time. Well, I've been watching The Boys.
It's interesting because we had stopped at 2, and I thought it was going to be a little bit more of a, like, I mean, it is an overarching story, but after the second episode, it becomes a little bit more of like a Monster of the Week kind of show, which is kind of fun. And it's kind of taken some turns that I didn't really think it was going to do. I'm really enjoying it so far, but the last couple episodes we watched were really good. So I'm really curious to see how this wraps up.
I keep saying, I like, every character is great, every actor is great. I love everybody except for the main two characters.
I still like them, but
everybody else has got really amazing storylines going on, and I'm just like, oh, more.
It's also funny now watching it because we hadn't had HBO, and so we're like, you know, watching a bunch of HBO stuff recently, and I keep thinking back on what you had said, Greg, when we first were talking about Lovecraft Country, where you said that it's very HBO, where they have to force like a sex scene into every episode, and it's like, it's so apparent, like it's like it just like, it's like the flow of the show just stops cold every single episode for like an awkward or like this like,
and we're gonna bang now.
All right, that's cool. It's like, now back to the story.
It's like, we were just talking about how sad it was that guy died, but like, okay, I guess, okay.
But nothing gets me more in the mood.
Yeah.
If people aren't watching Lovecraft Country, it's really, really good so far.
Good. Yeah. It's so good, and it's fun, but also dark.
It's got some cool kind of commentary. It's got like, but like, it's not like heavy handed. It's just kind of subtly put in there and sprinkled in like little references to things. Like it's really smart.
It also like comes at some other stuff that doesn't get addressed a lot from really, really weird angles where I'm like, interesting, what are you going to do with this now? Yeah. Like,
how many more episodes do we have?
I think there's 10 total. So I think there's, I believe tomorrow episode 9 airs, and then there's one more, I believe, after that.
Perfect. Well, then I'll be ready.
Yeah.
What I'm starting today or tonight, or maybe not till Monday, who knows? But I'm going to start The Haunting of Bly Manor finally.
Yeah, we got to watch that.
It just came out yesterday, but I'm like, I'll finally get to it. I'm excited. I love The Haunting of Hill House.
And it's 3 episodes, right? This Bly Manor one? It's a short.
No, I think it's 8. Maybe I'm wrong. Let's see. 9 episodes. Take it back. 9.
Never mind.
If you follow Mike Flanagan on Twitter, he's pretty active. Now that we're talking about it, I remember he addressed that because people were asking, what, there are only 3? So, he's like, no, there's 9.
But he didn't direct all of them this time, which is interesting. Or maybe, I think he directed all of Hill House, didn't he?
He directed all of Hill House. You're right. He did one episode, but he handed out the directing to other people, which I think is probably a good idea because I think he's already working on another movie right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. I'll check in next time and tell you what I thought.
Well, we've also been watching on HBO for the first time ever entire episodes of John Oliver. It's a whole show. Did you know that?
Right?
You're watching little clips on YouTube. Yeah, we I mean, I guess also on HBO, we watched Barry finally, which I really loved. If people haven't checked out Barry, I highly recommend it. Mm-hmm. I guess it's just about a hitman who is, he's just like got.
He's having a moral crisis.
Yeah. Thinking about it.
Like, and a midlife crisis.
Yeah. Really brilliantly written. It's really brilliantly acted. And it's got some amazing people, like new actors that I hadn't seen in things until like one of the leads, I can't remember his name is, but he's popped up in the new Bill and Ted as the killer robot. And he's really funny in Barry.
Oh,
and in
God. Bill, yeah. Ted. He's Anthony Carrigan.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, if we knocked down that wall, it would really open the place up. You know, clean up the blood, maybe add some French doors, maybe a ping pong table right there. You know, I'm just riffing.
He steals the show in Barry, and that's a hard thing to do when you have
Steven
Root. Bill Hader is excellent, and Henry Winkler is best he's been in ages.
Oh my God. Yeah. So good. Henry Winkler is like, when he pops up and Scream,
mm-hmm. right? As a principal. Yeah.
I was like, oh, he's going to, what is he doing here? And then I was like, I love you, sir. I love you again. And that's what happened best to you. I was like, oh, I love you. Everybody is so good in it. It's very dark, but it's also very funny, and it's also heartwarming. It's fucking weird.
Yeah, I can't wait for the third season of Barry, but yeah, those first two seasons we burned through really fast and loved every bit of it. Mm-hmm. Bill Hader just blows my mind. He's like so talented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we accidentally watched that in 2 days.
Yeah, I think we did.
We watched season one and season two in two days back to back.
Ah, you rookies. I don't know. I'm a nerd like that, though. If I get really into it, I can shut everything off for a minute. Just watch.
Tim won't let me do it. I would watch it. I'm burning through all the seasons of Forensic Files. So, but he'll be like, no, let's save one for tomorrow. We gotta get up or do whatever.
It's like, it's 2 a.m. If we start another episode, we're gonna be up until like 3 or 4. And it's like,
and I'm gonna want to watch another one because I will.
Hey, you know what? Who needs sleep?
I mean, during the pandemic, we don't need sleep, really.
Right? You guys don't sleep.
We still don't have jobs again.
Somehow you guys are the two of the busiest people I know, too. So
I know.
Since we're talking TV, for someone who doesn't like superheroes, I'm watching two shows that have superheroes in it that I really like. And the other one is on HBO. It's called Doom Patrol. Mm. And what that came from, DC Universe. Now, I don't know if that service is still available or not. I think it's ended.
I think it went under, or at least they're like part like kind of taking a bunch of shows that they had put exclusively on there onto other networks, because that ended up on HBO, and then the Swamp Thing show is ending up on CW, I believe.
I mean, you would think it was an HBO show, and Doom Patrol, that is. It brought back Brandon Fraser, mm-hmm. who's excellent. Mm.
I love Brandon Fraser. I didn't know he was in that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has him. It has Timothy Dalton, which is always fun to see. Mm. Ever since he showed back up in Penny Dreadful, the Showtime series.
Still haven't watched that, but
that's on Netflix, and that's for this season. It'd be great. They bring out all the old classic monster movie tropes. Like Frankenstein, Dracula, Dorian Gray, it's werewolves, everything.
Plus Josh Hartnett makes out with a guy, I think.
But we're not here to talk about Penny Dreadful. We're talking about Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol. But that's on HBO?
That's on HBO. And they renewed it, so they have another season coming. Now it's HBO 100%, I think. Everyone's good in it. It's based off, someone else could tell you way more about it than I could when it comes to the lore of this show. Apparently, Teen Titans is tied into this, and this is a long-running comic book series in DC.
I think it was either created or it was kind of reworked by Grant Morrison. Like his run, I believe, is one of the big ones that really like kind of took it to a whole new level. Is my understanding, because I remember
is Grant Morrison who wrote The Boys?
No, that's Garth Ennis.
Ennis,
yeah.
Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol, I know a friend of mine, Aaron, was really into it. He was just raving about that comic for years.
And I'm assuming they're basing it on his run at it.
That's my understanding, yeah.
Yeah.
And then when that show came out, I was like really excited about it, but then I was like, I'm not paying for another streaming service for this DC thing. Right. I was kind of bummed that like we couldn't watch it, and then I'm excited that you're telling me that it's on HBO now. So
yeah, you can watch it, and you should.
Yes.
Well, one more TV thing before we get into some more of these movies that I wanted to touch on is that we've watched the first two episodes of it so far of a new series directed by Gareth Evans, the director of The Raid. He has a new show with his longtime, his cinematographer that he's worked with. They're the two showrunners. It's Matt Flannery is the other guy, but it's called Gangs of London.
We're born into a certain world. It's chosen for us. Some might think it's brutal.
No, please, don't kill me.
I say it's glorious.
Someone chose to kill Finn Wallace. Today we mourn the loss of a great man, but tomorrow it will be business as usual.
No. Everything stops until I find out who killed him.
It came out in the UK last spring, and then it's been kind of stuck in limbo since because of it was like made for like Sky TV in the UK, and Cinemax was involved, but then they like dropped out. And so AMC just recently picked it up. So it's now the first three episodes are available to watch on AMC. If people have cable, they can watch it through the AMC like app. Otherwise, you can pay through a few different streaming services to add AMC Plus, which is their new streaming service. Or maybe it's not new. It's new to me because of this. But you can get AMC Plus. You can get like a 7-day trial. So maybe wait till all the episodes are up and then burn through it. Mm-hmm. But man, it's so good. It's like a modern day crime story in London of like this like crime families and kind of this like there's like the first episode is about like this kind of feature length directed by Gareth Evans and it kind of sets up a bunch of the dynamics and then something happens that kind of throws the whole infrastructure of this like this crime organizations out of whack.
I gotta say, we're watching the first episode like I don't know how long and it felt like 20 minutes if it wasn't. I was like, why? What is this again? Like, why did he want me to watch this? And like. I maybe counted to three and then the scene exploded in violence. And I was like, oh, this is the thing from the guy from The Raid. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
It's definitely The Raid guy. Just stick with it. I think that first set piece in the first episode doesn't really happen until at least halfway through. So like 45 minutes maybe into it. But when it happens, you're just like, oh my God, this is brutal and awesome.
Amazing.
And then there's another one at the end of the episode that's just even more brutal. And it just like, it just keeps ratcheting it up. Mm-hmm. In the second episode, there's a whole like gun massacre that's just like so gory and so intense. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to see where the show goes because, man, it is.
But also, like, I feel like it kind of shows where his weaknesses are. Like, when it was all just like,
talking.
Backstory and dialogue and interpersonal. I'm like, you are not very good at directing actors unless there's like a whole bunch of action and then you have to cram a bunch of like things, like a bunch of emotion or dialogue or like backstory or like conflict resolution into like 4 seconds between things and then move on. Like that's his strong point. Once things get going, like it definitely, everything got better.
Gangs of London.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's so far I'm like hooked because of like just like the intensity of the violence and the like the action sequences and the set pieces of that are just like,
and it's all like
so good
stuff that I haven't seen before too. So it's like it's not just violent, but it's like clever.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah. If you're a fan of like the Raid movies or of like maybe like, you know, some of the stuff like maybe like the Daredevil and kind of like the fight sequences and that, like just that kind of action, like it's got a lot of that, but it's like definitely even like upped the ante from what we've seen. And I've been told by someone who's seen the entire series that it just keeps getting more and more intense as the show goes on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge fan of Breaking Bad, but for some reason I never checked out El Camino, which was the follow-up movie they made on Netflix to the series. And it follows what happens to the character Jesse after the big ending of Breaking Bad, which I won't spoil for you if you haven't seen it. You probably have. If you haven't, go watch it. It's not for everyone, Breaking Bad, for the record. So right. If you don't like it, I kind of get it, but I loved it. El Camino was great. It felt good to be sitting back in that chair again and watching another episode, albeit a little bit longer, than normal episodes of Breaking Bad. They had all the characters come back because there's a lot of flashbacks in it. So you got to see Walter White. You got to see everyone a little bit. And a proof that Aaron Paul, I think, does have the chops to lead something. He could hold a movie. He was always great as Jesse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually pretty fun in Bo Horseman on Netflix.
BoJack Horseman.
Yeah, there you go. And that's a great show, too. It's one of those shows I haven't finished, but I always kind of dip back into it and I enjoy it.
I don't, that's one I couldn't get into. One of my oldest friends is like, has been trying to get me to watch it forever. And at the beginning of the pandemic, I was like, all right, I guess I got time to try this now. And I just couldn't do it. But you're right. That he is, what is his name? What's the actor's name?
Aaron Paul.
Aaron Paul brings like so much heart to characters you shouldn't care about.
Right.
Without trying, it seems like. Like, he's just so good at it, you're like, you automatically are just, like, sympathetic to a character that when you step back and look at it, you're like, wait a second.
Yeah, that's exactly what he did with Jesse. I mean, Jesse was kind of a hateable character. And then even the end of El Camino, you're just happy that, you know, and I wouldn't even call it an uplifting episode, but or, you know, ending even necessarily, but it just felt good that you always felt bad. Give Jesse a freaking break.
Yeah. By the end, you're just like, I just hope he makes it out alive. It's like, he's like a sad puppy.
Yeah, he is a sad puppy.
But yeah, so it held up. If anyone out there, Breaking Bad, big fan of that, and has not watched El Camino, go ahead. If you love Breaking Bad, there's no reason you wouldn't love El Camino.
I have not seen El Camino, and we still haven't watched Better Call Saul, which I continuously hear good things about, and we love Bob Odenkirk.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I've watched about the half of the first season, loved it, whatever reason, didn't finish it.
Yeah, and I've heard that show just gets better and better as it goes. So yeah, it's just another one we just got to like pull the trigger on. And
somebody, a filmmaker or a scriptwriter or somebody that I follow on Twitter whose opinion I value or whatever, align with, said, like, was just like, oh man, like this season of Better Call Saul is like the best thing I've ever seen. And I'm like, oh, dang it. Like, I didn't even know it was still on. Like, what's wrong with me?
Yeah, it's kind of intimidating because there's like five seasons or something now. Anyway,
yeah. Right? Yeah.
I think it's the last season is airing now. I think it's like, I think there's the final season's about to air, or it just is airing, is what I was hearing.
Bob Odenkirk?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's really come out of to become like just a great actor. Mm-hmm. I mean, he started on Ben Stiller shows where I remember him, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And,
yep.
You know, he's always kind of silly. And Mr. Show.
Yep. And when we watched it at the time, Tim had the same observation about Kids in the Hall, I think, where it's like, you watch it at the time and you're like, oh, the like, I don't know, razzle-dazzle characters, that was all I came up with, are like the ones that you're like, oh, I love, you know,
David Cross,
like, because he's, you know, whatever, he's crass, he's loud, he's whatever.
Yeah.
But then when you rewatch it, you're like, oh, but Bob Odenkirk has range.
Yeah.
Like,
Mark McKinney, like you in Kids in the Hall, you're like, he's the sleeper character, the one that blends in so well, you didn't even notice he was doing it. Like,
he was really good in Fargo season one as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We just this like whatever last week was the virtual Fantastic Fest, which we tuned into and we tried to catch everything we could. We only missed two films. I think we caught everything else, which was a lot of fun. We saw some good stuff, some not so great stuff, but some of the highlights were there's a kind of neo-noir, kind of rural small town film starring Bella Thorne, I think is her name, and Mickey Rourke, called Girl. Wasn't great. There's some I don't know, there's some really bad dialogue, but some really good performances.
Yeah. I think the guy like wrote, directed, and was one of the more main characters in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he lucked out or intentionally picked actors that could carry that on their like on their own without much effort. Like he cast it really well, but then I think that he should have let them play with their dialogue a little bit, or maybe not play with their dialogue. But if something's going to bother you in that movie, it's definitely going to be the dialogue.
Yeah.
Everything else is great.
Yeah, see, it's not like, I wouldn't say it was like a great film, but it was really interesting. And I think it had a really, like the story was really interesting and it did a good job with it. It's just that, I think the script could have personally, I think the script could have been tightened up, or you
got use an editor,
or yeah, rewrite from somebody. But
sure,
but that was fun. We also watched one of the most insane animated films I've ever seen. I'd say
I'm gonna say it is the most.
It's called The Old Man Movie. It's from somewhere, like, I think it's like the Ukraine or Astoria, and it's like really crude, like stop motion, like Wallace and Gromit kind of style animation, but with like a fully adult story.
Yeah.
The general theme is that a bunch of little kids go to stay with their grandfather on a farm for the summer. And their grandfather is a dairy farmer. He has a cow that he milks for the local townspeople. There's a flashback thing in the beginning where the greatest milking farmer had a problem with his cow and he couldn't milk it anymore. And if you can't milk the cow will explode and it'll cause the lactopolis, where it's like a giant nuclear explosion of milk and it burned all his skin off. Like, so this guy ended up in a wheelchair.
Like an apocalypse, but a lactopolis.
And he's just seeping milk out of his skin, and he's in a wheelchair. He's like, it's just bizarre. And yeah, like he's trying to kidnap the cow to kill it, and the cow gets loose, and they are like, it's kind of like, it's just like this crazy, like he hires a bunch of like local lumberjacks to try and kill it. At one point, everybody ends up in the anus of a bear.
A tree tricks them into
having sex with it.
Yeah,
it's
weird,
really bizarre. Wow. But it was like, if you're looking for something completely bizarre, check out The Old Man Movie, because man, it was one of the more insane things I think one of the more insane things that we saw of all of Fantastic Fest stuff.
Yeah. Wow. But I just thought of something. It was like off the wall in ways that weren't like, I don't remember there being like any pedophilia in it. Like, no, there was no incest. I feel like those, like the, when things get that weird, like for some reason, like that, like then all of a sudden like real, like grounded, gross and weird things start coming in. But I didn't remember any real gross and uncomfortable things coming into play. Except for the eating of things. There was some gross eating.
This
of
was
things.
Feature length?
Yeah, yeah, it's a feature length film.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I guess last week's episode, we talked about The Boy Behind the Door, which again was like one of the best ones we saw. Oh. Once that goes up somewhere, people should check that one out.
That was so good.
We saw a French werewolf movie called Teddy that was a little, I don't know, uneven, but was a very interesting little werewolf film.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't need to go too deep into that. We mentioned The Stylist last week, which was you really liked. I thought it was
really
pretty good.
Liked it.
And then I didn't write it down, but Queen of Black Magic, I believe is the name of the film, which is another one that's really great, which I believe will end up on Shudder soon, because it did have the Shudder logo at the beginning of the film. But it was an Indonesian horror film about an orphanage. It's like some brothers reunite at the orphanage because they're the person running the orphanage.
Oh, that one was scary.
Yeah, it was really creepy. If people were a fan of that new Satan's Slaves film that was on Shudder, or if you haven't seen Satan's Slaves, check it out.
Yeah.
This is very much has the same vibe as that. Really creepy, really, really unique and interesting Indonesian film. Yeah, The Queen of Black Magic, I believe is what it was called.
Yeah, that was so many layers of,
scary, huh?
I forgot, I don't even know what you're talking about. And then all of a sudden I was like, school bus.
Yep. and then some other weirder stuff that they did for Fantastic Fest, like some of the event things. They did a Master Pancake, as they're kind of a live riffing, sort of like the Mystery Science Theater guys.
Yeah.
They did a live riff of Invasion of the Bee Girls, which I had never actually seen before. that was a lot of fun. But if people are interested in that kind of stuff, like live riffing, like if you're into riff tracks and you're into Mystery Science Theater, you should check out. They said that they're doing live riffing like twice a week during the pandemic. Over Twitch. So search for Master Pancake and check them out, because they're really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And they do some stuff that I've never seen in live riffing, where they'll like rewind the film to like pause it, and then they'll like, or they'll cut in their own sound things. Like, so like they'll rewind a scene and then play it with like Yakety Sax or something over, you know, like, or something like that. Like they'll play, like, and it, like, it's hilarious. Like it works so super well. And they kind of mess with the movie a little bit more.
They did once, nice. Like it was like the end of the movie, like all like the killer. I didn't know that Attack of the Killer Bee Girls
is Invasion of the Bee Girls.
They have Invasion of the Bee Girls. They're bees, like they're actually like insect bees. I thought it was like a pun on like bee movies or something somehow. Yeah. No, they're real bees. Yeah. But like all the bee girls are being, you know, massacred by the good guys, and then we play the whole scene, and then they're like.
But it's like,
now let's see that again with different music. And then it's sad. Oh my God, it's the saddest thing.
They played like Hallelujah over it. And it's like, oh my God, it was so funny. And so it's like, oh my God, this works too well. Man.
Yeah, I've been meaning to check them out because I know their Alamo has a bunch on their streaming of them. And I know, I think the Mads have joined up with them once or twice too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have.
Yeah, I keep meaning to go and rent or buy off the streaming service, and I really should do that. That sounds like a blast. Yeah.
If people haven't checked out Alamo On Demand, there's a lot of great content on there, and some of that Fantastic Fest stuff is still available, I think. So they do, every year at Fantastic Fest, they do a clip show called, like it's like the 100 Best Kills, kind of. It's like they cut together like 100 kills in a theme for movies, and this year it was Decap Attack. It was like decapitations. And it was hilarious. It's super funny. Like they do some deep cuts, and I think that's still available on the streaming service if people want to check it out. If that's like, I think it's free. But it's Lars, or Zach Carlson, hosted it, and he hosts it every year. Like a couple years ago, they did Vehicle, where it was like a bunch of vehicle murder or deaths in movies. But Decap Attack is a lot of fun. It's like 100 best kills. Decap Attack, I think is what it's called.
And there's one clip in that we need very desperately to know what it's from. Yeah,
it's from a movie we recently watched.
We disagree on when we watched it.
Well, we have seen the film.
We have seen this film. I know we've seen this film.
Is this because the one I that you pointed out to me?
Yeah.
There's a chubby goat, chubby black goat, and he's watching a guy get threshed by a thresher or some sort of giant farm machinery. And the goat, I don't think, is doing the murdering. The goat is just like
watching him,
watching and being like, "I'm a goat and I don't care."
I've seen the clip you guys were talking about because, Tim showed it to me. Yeah, you're right. It feels like something you know. What is it? It almost feels like that goat is like not really part of anything outside of that scene.
Yeah, I think that scene felt like a tack-on scene, which sucks because then we're never going to figure it out.
You know what?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll put a link to that. On our blog, and someone out there knows it, let us know.
Tell us what it is. It's driving us nuts.
VideoKillersPodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Or find us on Facebook or Twitter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the other fun one was that AGFA did a screening of a film called Triple Fisher. I don't know if you're familiar with this one.
Accidental assault? Does this look like an accident?
Did you see how she folded that pizza? The way she put it in her mouth and took a bite real slow when she was looking at you?
Maybe the pizza was hot.
The pizza was hot. She's hot for you.
Amy, you said Joey gave you the herpes.
Don't worry, honey.
I know what I said.
He's lying.
Elliot!
I think the idea of a 40-year-old man sleeping with a 16-year-old girl is absolutely disgusting.
Way to go, Joey!
Back in the 90s, there was three made-for-TV movies that were all aired the same week about Amy Fisher, the Joey Buttafuoco story.
An adult man having an affair with a teenage girl. The teenage girl then went and shot the man's wife in the face. They were from the Bronx. Staten Island?
Yeah, or Long Island, maybe.
They all have very New York accents.
But yeah, it was a true crime thing that kind of took over all of media back in the 90s, so much so that three made-for-TV movies were made simultaneously. One was starring Drew Barrymore. One was starring Alyssa Milano. And then I can't remember what the other actress's name. But this madman, I can't remember, I'm blanking his name now, took all three films and intercut them into one super film where it's like they're intercutting some of the same scenes. It's that really sounds fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I didn't know that's what it was. I had seen them advertising it. The Long Island Lolita, remember? So it's Long Island.
Yeah. Oh, not Staten Island, Long Island.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a bizarre little experiment that strangely works in really, really weird ways.
So weird. It was
so they
weird.
Take all three of those films and make one film with it?
Yeah, basically. they intercut like some of the same scenes in that each film does.
Like each, I mean, they're all outlining the same story, basically, but each movie got rights from a different source. So like one movie is coming from Bode Fuoco's perspective, one is coming from Amy Fisher's perspective, and one is coming from the journalist's perspective because they couldn't get the rights from anybody directly involved. So like they all have different things, but they're all hitting the same beats for the most part, or at least two will line up at one point. You know, they'll be like covering this part of it, covering that part of it.
It's weird. It's funny because like each one of them has those pivotal parts of the story that each one of them does. But then like when you see them all kind of side by side, or like you're like, you know, intercut, it's like funny to see how each one of them approached that moment of the story. Mm-hmm. and how like just like some of them are almost identical. Some of them are like so different.
Very different.
It's really funny. And like, yeah, it's awesome. It's really cool.
I'm on the lookout for that. Hopefully that is streaming. And if it's not, it will be.
Yeah.
I forgot that in that scandal, though, that they ultimately were like, oh, he never had sex with that girl. And I was like, are you kidding me? That guy did. He most certainly did. Like, that's why she went crazy, I'm pretty sure. Like, he did.
I think they got together after she came out of prison, too, if my tabloid
think you're right.
Memory is right.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's a bizarre story. And then I guess the last one I was going to touch on is Action USA, which is a late 80s, I think, crazy action movie directed by a stuntman starring the actor who I'm blanking his name. Greg, you might know it. It's the guy who is Mac's dad on It's Always Sunny. He pops up in so many crazy movies.
Is, I think, the one that crashes the motorcycle into the governor's mansion or whatever it is.
Gregory Cummings? He was in Cliffhanger, I know that.
Yep. Mm. He's in Cliffhanger for sure.
What am I thinking of? Why did I get all the way to
Stone
the motorcycle?
Cold?
Yeah, Stone Cold.
I don't think he's in Stone Cold.
What? Yeah, he is.
Is he? Oh, no, you're right. Yep. Yeah. No, you're right.
Oh,
yep.
He's in the helicopter. He's in the helicopter that the motorcycle crashes into the building.
Yeah. But I pulled him up. He's in Blood Games, too.
Yeah. That's right. We have seen him in so much stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, Phantom of the Mall. I mean, he's like...
He's the star, one of the stars of this one.
Yeah, he's one of the cops. It's basically like a guy gets killed. The lady witnesses it. They got to try and protect her. And they're really terrible at their jobs. So then it just turns into like a chase where the bad guys get her. And then the good guys get her. And the bad guys get her. And they're just like... And it's just intercutting insane car stunts after insane car stunts. It's a film that was kind of stuck on VHS for years. So like the really terrible copies existed. And it recently came on the radar of the Alamo Drafthouse and like Tim League and AGFA. And they were able to track down the filmmaker. And they got the film print and they did a 4K restoration of this thing that is now available on Alamo On Demand for another week, I think. And then they're going to try and put it in theaters. You can rent the 4K restoration of Action USA. And if you like bonkers, crazy over-the-top action films, Action USA is that and more.
Your cat sounds like one of those English sirens. Wow!
That's him screaming. He screams. He's a terrible monster. Yeah, you're gonna hear our cat in this bunch because I don't think there's anything we could do anymore. We don't have rooms in this apartment.
I believe I've seen this movie. A VHS.
Saw it on VHS, and I was like, I remember being bored halfway through, and then we rewatched it, and I was like, it's probably because we couldn't see half of what's happening.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Seeing this restoration definitely painted the film in a different light for me, mm-hmm. which is crazy. Like how much more enjoyable it was seeing it all cleaned up like this. But it's a lot of fun.
Did you guys ever see Dangerous Men?
Yeah.
Just get out of here and leave us alone!
Dangerous Men. Guaranteed it's like nothing you've seen before.
What is it? Have I watched this?
Yeah, I don't think I could even explain it to you, honestly.
I seen this?
Yeah, we watched it.
Oh, no.
We watched it probably in the last year, honestly. And mess of a movie that would took the guy like what 20 years to make it, and it's a bizarre, bonkers film. I enjoyed it, but it, yeah, again, because one of those movies that kind of washes off of your brain a little bit after you watch it. I remember key moments, but that's about it. Another thing we watched during the Fantastic Fest, which I didn't mention, was we watched all the shorts blocks, which there was a bunch of great shorts throughout shorts blocks. And a couple to mention that might pop up online if people like are into watching short films. One was Abracitos, like a Spanish language one, where I think it translates to like huggable or huggies.
Yeah, I didn't like that one.
It was really creepy. A very short, very effective, creepy little short film.
It was like, yeah, it translated into like need to or like desire to be hugged or want to be hugged.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. That was a good one. It's terrible. Oh, God.
There was a fun, weird one that had a very Adult Swim vibe to it. That was called Lusty Crests. That was like almost like it was like a weird 80s sitcom based in romance novels.
Oh, covers. Romance novel covers.
Yeah. That was very, it was really funny, really weird, very entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
There was one called Stuck. It was about a girl's gymnast or class, like a gym.
Yeah.
And a creepy dude that's. Really, one was also very, very satisfying.
That was a creeper revenge movie.
Yeah.
For sure.
Another one that had a kind of Adult Swim vibe is called You'll Make It in Florida, where this woman is sitting in this kind of dreary New York park, and this guy comes up, or she's like flipping through a magazine. It has a kind of 70s feel. She's flipping through a magazine. There's an ad, like a newspaper or a magazine ad for Florida in it. And this guy pops up and he's like kind of like a conductor. And then he takes her on this like psychedelic journey into Florida, like to like a both like a 70s advertisement for Florida. And it just starts breaking the fourth wall. And
yeah, well, you also forgot that when we meet her, she's sitting with her sister outside in a park. And then her sister goes to find a bathroom. They're in New York. So she goes to find a bathroom somewhere. And when she comes back, her sister's gone. So they keep coming back to that and all of the trauma she's dealing with because now her sister suddenly disappeared.
It's really bizarre and very funny. And then I guess we mentioned Blocks on the last podcast. That one's also fun.
That was, yeah.
But then the last one I wanted to mention, if it ever pops up online, I know you saw this one, Greg. It's called Great Choice.
Oh, man.
It's like a 90s Red Lobster commercial. This lady's stuck in a Red Lobster commercial, and it just starts like going into like nightmare territory where the commercial keeps playing over and over again, and she's trying to escape this commercial, and it's really funny and really like, I thought it was great.
If you're a fan of Too Many Cooks.
That's a lot of shrimp.
At Red Lobster, for a limited time, enjoy 30 shrimp for just $10.99.
What sounds good to you folks tonight?
30 shrimp, please.
Great choice.
With our famous fried shrimp, succulent scampi, lemon pepper shrimp, and delicious grilled shrimp. That's four different kinds. 30 shrimp on one plate, just $10.99. At only one place.
Only at Red Lobster.
And kids get shrimp too. A complete meal, just $2.99.
It was a blast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's the ones I wanted to talk about. Those are all really fun. Do you have anything else you want to talk about, Clint?
From Fantastic Fest?
But just in general, before we kind of get into the music segment.
I wrote down Pale Blood, and I don't know what that is now. So
it is a Vinegar Syndrome release of 90s vampire movie starring Wings Hauser.
Oh, yeah. That was fun. That was weird.
Can I take mid-80s vampire movie with Wings Hauser for $500?
Yeah, that was
the answer is
surprising little fun vampire movie.
It was very, very fun, very weird. Lots of visuals, like 80s, 90s tropes happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like you live in a big empty marble apartment for some reason with no furniture. Interesting choice.
Yeah.
Or like,
in fact, that was really Wings Hauser's house.
Yeah, right. Yeah, probably.
Was it? Oh, God.
No.
I was like, Jesus. Well, we didn't get into the two territories of the two things that I watched on my own. Oh, no, I didn't watch them on my own. One I watched on my own, one we watched together. We watched that fungus movie, which I can't remember the name of.
Fantastic Fungi?
We can heal the planet. We can build the future. And our world is fantastic.
Fantastic Fungi. And then I watched Kiss the Ground.
Oh, right.
Fantastic Fungi. It was very interesting documentary about mushrooms, basically, and how they function in our world and how there's so much more to them than you understand. And it was, this isn't going to mean anything to very many people, but the guy who is behind Host Defense, which is a supplement line, had some part in it. They talked to him a lot in it. It might have just started as a documentary about him. That guy is like, he decided mushrooms were interesting, and he decided he was going to understand every single aspect of them that he could possibly understand. And because I worked in a body care aisle for a really long time, I know that that guy is, the reason anybody's interested in mushrooms for supplemental health is because this guy was finding all these functions that they can affect in people. I don't necessarily buy into even if you had found me in the body care aisle of Whole Foods Market, I would have talked you out of a lot of things, buying a lot of things. So I don't buy into a lot of that stuff. He, the way in which he approaches it is like such a full picture, understanding of the documentary that is a full picture understanding of how mushrooms fit into our ecology and our bodies. And it's so, so interesting. And I recommend it very much. It also, it feels like you're on acid a lot of the time.
Yeah,
I'm probably tripping on mushrooms, but those just give me IBS symptoms. So, it's really pretty.
It gets really heady and kind of psychedelic at points, and it's a really fascinating documentary. I don't know if people aren't really necessarily into that stuff. It's worth checking out. It's because they kind of go into how mushrooms maybe played a part in our evolution, and how mushrooms can, psychedelic mushrooms are being tested and doing some medical tests and what they do function in certain ways, how fungus roots play a huge part under the ground and how plants communicate with each other. And
yeah, they basically act as telephone wire. Well, not even that, because they're kind of pneumatic tubes between plants, because plants can exchange nutrients with each other through the fungus systems. It's super, super interesting. And I don't know if they mentioned this in that documentary, but this comes into play in the next one, that we have more genetic material for bacteria than we have genetic material to make us human beings. We are more bacteria than we are person.
I know
crazy.
A lot of people that are more bacteria than person. For sure.
Yeah. I think maybe some people should be more bacteria. Is that what's wrong with the...
Probably, right?
I think that's the problem. But the Kiss the Ground was partnered really well with that. It's all about soil ecology and how a lot of our CO2 problems may be stemming from the way that we farm. Conventional, quote unquote, farming is you just till everything so that it's dirt, and then you plant seeds on that, and then stuff grows from that. Once you've harvested what you need from that, you till it all into dirt again. And that whole cycle goes over and over and over and over and over again. This is not debatable. That is very, very terrible for the soil, which we all knew.
There's so much bad news about our planet. It's overwhelming. Truth is, I've given up. This is the story of a simple solution, a way to heal our planet. The solution is right under our feet, and it's as old as dirt.
This documentary kind of goes into how we can restore that and how plants actually trap carbon in the ground, how being on that merry-go-round is putting so much stress on our environment, and it's so needless because there are simple workarounds to it. It's so interesting. It comes at it from a lot of different angles. It is narrated by Woody Harrelson, so that was a little weird because it sounds like a stoner's talking to you the whole time, because he was.
Yeah.
But it's also really approachable and digestible. And yeah, Patricia Arquette and David Arquette talk about a composting toilet that they helped develop for people in Haiti after the tsunami. Yeah, those two together are incredibly interesting, and it made me go out and I've been doing some unauthorized gardening this year. But before the pandemic, I was planning on it. I'd got a list of things I was gonna do and whatever. And then during the pandemic, I spent $70 on seeds. Now I've been collecting seeds, but I was I gotta go plant some seeds.
Nice.
And walked around the next day, and it's like,
where were you able to see these?
Kiss the Ground is new, just came out on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And the Fantastic Fungi, you can get directly from them, I think, on Vimeo.
Yeah, it's on a bunch of streaming platforms. You can rent it right now, but it's you can. The filmmakers have it on their Vimeo site for rental from them directly if you want.
I recommend that route. Perfect. I can't imagine they're making a ton of money off that movie right now.
Sure.
All right, well, let's get into our music segment. I decided to go super nerdy this time because it's Halloween season and there's some fun, you know, I've been listening to a lot of horror scores again. Or I guess I always do, but I've been listening to a lot more horror scores maybe than only horror scores recently. And one thing I've been a fan of film scores pretty much my entire life. And one thing that you notice when you start listening to film scores, you start noticing like similarities and little things that kind of pop up in different ones that like weird, like almost like the Wilhelm Scream. Like if people don't know the Wilhelm Scream, it's like this famous recording from a 50s movie, I think. But if people will recognize it instantly when they hear it, but it's in tons of movies. It's sort of like a kind of a little fun nod or a little inside joke kind of that filmmakers will use in their sound recording. Well, there's a similar thing that happens in film scores, and it's called dies irae. I mean, I'm imagining that a lot of people maybe know this already or will definitely recognize it, but dies irae is it's a Gregorian chant from like the 13th century. It was used by like Catholic monks, I believe, at like funerals, but it translates to the day of wrath. Some composers will use it and it's very blatant, and some will kind of interweave it into themes from films, but it's in like countless numbers of soundtracks. But the one that people probably most know it from is The Shining, Wendy Carlos's use. So I'm going to actually play a little clip of that real quick here. Here we go. Okay, so yeah, The Shining, I think everybody kind of will know that theme, but that melody is dies irae, is what it's called, or I might be butchering the pronunciation, I'm sure, but that is kind of, it was interworked in a lot of classical music, so like Mozart used it, it's in Holst's Planets, there's the Symphony Fantastique, which is like a kind of famous classical piece, which is actually the Wendy Carlos's use of it is actually pulling from that original classical piece, the Symphony Fantastique. And then it's a Messa de Requiem is a really famous use by Giuseppe Verdi from the 1874. But that one specifically is a one that people will recognize, but is used in a lot of films. But so that I'm going to play a little clip of that real quick. I think everybody will know that piece of music because it's used in so many films, like that specific piece. But a lot of the composers were influenced by that piece or like that the use of it in the films. It becomes sort of a shorthand for mourning or like dread, kind of when something bad is going to happen in films. But it's like the list of films that I've found that it's in. I'm just going to like rattle off a whole bunch of titles real quick. It's like Rogue One, Infinity War, Citizen Kane, Sweeney Todd, The Lion King, Frozen 2, the original Star Wars, It's a Wonderful Life, Demolition Man, Killer Nun, Omen 1 and 2, The Car, Lord of the Rings, Groundhog's Day, Jurassic Park. Like, I mean, I have like pages of ones that I found references of it. And it's funny, like I actually pulled the clip from Star Wars, which it's like when Luke finds out that he's lost family members. Yeah. It's a Wonderful Life.
Clarence! Clarence! Help me, Clarence! Get me back! Get me back! I don't care what happens to me!
I don't know if you can hear the background there, but playing over and over in the background.
Help me, Clarence, please!
The theme to the movie, the car, that main title track is a use of it. But it's just, it's super fun. Like you can, once you know it, like you start listening for it and you just start hearing it everywhere. It's like really, really fun. But like even like the Exorcist theme is sort of a reworking of dies irae, which is really fun. And then some composers really like to use it just over and over again. Like Ennio Morricone works it into a lot of pieces. And one of the
to be fair, Ennio Morricone had to write a lot of music.
So like... but he uses a lot of vocalizations of it in some of his scores. So like there's one from a film called Escalation that he has the score. I really love this track.
Into a little jazzy cocktail number of 20.
It's like one of the things where, yeah, once you hear it, you can't like unlearn that information, and you just start like realizing, oh yeah, there it is again.
You ruined everything for us. Dang it.
That's what we do here at Video Killers. Video Killers, rooting movies since 2020.
Tim was very spoiler free about Star Wars for some reason.
I don't want to spoil it. People haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Gotta be careful. Awesome nondescript family members.
Yeah. I'm not going to say who. You just got to watch to find out. Yeah. So that was just like, I thought that would be fun to kind of poke into that a little bit and kind of showcase a Dies Irae.
Fascinating. I really like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess maybe I can play out a little bit. There's one more cue that I really like, which is actually from the Shining documentary, which is sort of making reference to the Wendy Carlos use of it, but it's from Room 237, which is the kind of bonkers documentary about all the insane conspiracy
theories.
It is
another one you should really watch. It's intense. It gives you such insight into so many different things, and not to the least of which is how much people will read into things if you don't explain them.
Yeah. Or
from your own perspective.
Or how insane your fellow man is, really.
It's true. Your next door neighbor who sounds pretty reasonable might have weird theories about this movie.
Follow us on Facebook, Video Killers, Tape Freaks, Tape Freaks Blogspot. Go to the Podient Video Killers blog for all the links to all the things we've talked about. And then if people know what the GOAT movie is, please send us an email.
Yeah, please.
Yes.
And someday I'll get the Instagram going.
Yeah.
It's there if you want to follow it, just so that you're surprised one day by me posting content on it.
Also, for people out there that don't know... Tim Holly could also be heard on
the Aging Hipster podcast.
Fun podcast. You're also on that podcast. Is this name taken? It's a great interview.
Oh, thanks.
I haven't heard that either.
I've been taking the pandemic to get, I guess, into podcasting. That's my thing now, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Michael Rowland. I'm trying to think of his name. Michael Rowland's podcast. Is this podcast name taken?
That's it.
Yeah.
Where was I when you were interviewing for that? I just realized I don't think I was here.
I don't know.
It's weird.
Yeah.
You're gardening or eating some fungi or something.
Sprinkling seeds around the neighborhood.
Yeah. Well, cool. We'll be back next week for some more fun deep dive stuff.
There's a stop button, damn it. I have so many windows open.
On the next Video Killers.
Many strange things happen around here.
There is a tale.
It was a night like tonight, many years ago.
There is a legend.
If you say his name above a whisper, he'll get you.
There is a warning.
On certain nights, when the moon is full, he's out there stalking in the woods.
There is a madman.
His name is Mars. Mad Man Mars.